We had a couple that we know, friends of ours, they went to a swingers party recently. That's not my scene. I would not be able to handle a swingers party. Everybody just kind of going at it, I guess. Like, if that's your thing, that's great. That's wonderful. I just wouldn't be able to do it. I don't even like regular parties. I couldn't. Like, if I was at a swingers party, just like a regular party, I would probably still just end up in the kitchen petting the dog. Like, that's what I was doing. I always want to be the first guy to leave a party too, get out of there like 10 p.m. You always got to give your wife, your husband, your boyfriend, girlfriend the eye and be like, ready to get out of here. How do you do that at a swingers party? I got to go find my wife up in a bedroom somewhere. Be like, honey, you want me to grab your jacket? Or find your jeans? How do we do this? What is the protocol here?
Hello, what's up? Yeah. Hi.
Hangover, yes. Comedy Podcast.
Yay.
Yeah.
Don't question my enthusiasm. I'm very low. I'm just tired compared to all other episodes. So I thought, hey, I'm allowed to sound like this.
Yes. This is the most excited that Enshady's ever sounded.
Yeah. Who says women cannot have mood swings and exactly. Men can also do? Who says?
Men can have mood swings too. Yeah.
Yeah. This come is, on. I want to play with mine. I want to play with mine.
Okay, there you go. This is episode 36, everybody. So 36.
36,
man.
Wow.
We're still going. They haven't shut us off yet. YouTube is not.
I have nothing. I have nothing stupid to say about 36. Nothing idiotic to say. I mean, it's if I'm an Indian, if I was still single at 36, I would genuinely kill myself. Or I would have my therapist do it for me because at that point, you're just questioning everything.
But you can't do arranged marriage in India? I thought you can just
you
do
arranged
marriage. No?
You can. We can. But some people literally choose to not do it. Like, it's the easiest hack in the Indian culture because it just takes out so much stress. But, you know, end of the day, even if you do arranged all love marriage, you don't realize that fights can happen.
Fights are always going to happen, man. That,
and
that
you can
matter.
You can still call the divorce lawyer. It doesn't matter both ways.
Yes.
It's the inevitable truth. That's why I always say, like, it's marriage is not about love or trust. It's about compromise. It's as clear as it gets. Don't give me that bullshit, right?
Yeah.
Right. So what have you been up to?
So I'm going skiing tomorrow. So, have you ever gone skiing?
No, I've gone skiing on women, if that counts. That doesn't count.
Okay. On the bunny slope.
I mean, I've if you're talking about sliding, then I have slid.
Slid in the DMs.
DMs. Okay. But no, there are places in India where skiing does happen. Like there are places like Himachal Pradesh and Manali, Shimla, Darjeeling.
Is that north? That's all north though, right?
That's all like, that's like completely mountain sized, like New Zealand, Switzerland kind of a vibe.
Okay.
full snow shit.
Yeah.
There are places where it is peak of the mountain weather, where it is like snowing, right? Parts of India. So you have activities like this. So I think it's great though. Skiing is a good exercise. You need balance in skiing. Like I've never seen a fat guy. I've never seen a fat guy do a ski really well. Never seen it.
No, it can happen. You have to have the right skis though. I will say this: skiing is not something where it's like a bike where you can just kind of just do it. Like you not for like a few years and forget about it and just come back to it.
Right.
Because like
right.
I didn't do skiing for like 5 years though, and then I came back. Yeah, there was like a 5-year gap, right? And then like I came back to it and like I was just falling all over the place. And there was like 5-year-olds passing me, like grandma passing me all over the place. I just kept falling because like you lose that skill though. You have I think it's like you have to do it at least every couple of years. So,
because otherwise, but you don't get hurt because you are falling on snow. You don't get hurt.
It depends, but there's trees.
Yeah. what are you coyote?
Like a cartoon? Yeah.
A cartoon, like just walk.
Yeah.
No, but skiing is the only sport where falling seems fun. Just saying. Is the only idea.
Yeah. Exactly.
Also, I have a funny I just realized something. Why do we call it? It's a question, Kevin. Why do we call it taking a shit when we are?
This is the topic you want to bring in.
Yeah, this is if I realize this. Like, why do people say taking a shit when we in reality we are dropping a shit? Like, isn't the shit leaving from your body? Like, it's yeah. Then why do we? So shouldn't we call it leaving a shit? Why do we call it taking a shit? It's not coming back with you. It's not going back inside.
You're taking it out of your body, maybe.
Right. So why? No, but it's taking a shit. That sounds like you're taking it with you. So then shouldn't it be called taking out a shit? Right.
It should be.
And
they wrote out the word. Yeah, they did.
It's a great opening topic, though. Just saying.
This is a terrible opening topic. You say you had an opening topic, and that was a terrible opening topic.
I'm tired. I have nothing processed.
I know.
This was the best I could come up with.
Taking a shit. There you go. Okay. Perfect.
Something to really think about.
It is something to think about. I didn't think about. I mean, I'm sure Jerry Seinfeld thought about that too. Like, oh, what's up with taking a shit? Like. I don't know.
All right, so we got to get in.
Let's get in the guest. I'm so pumped for this guest, okay?
Who do we have for today? Who's the guy?
Okay, so this guy, right? This guy was Philly's funniest in 2013, okay? That's a big deal. Philly's a big city, man. So, I mean, to be the best comic out of the whole city, big deal, okay? He has a podcast called A Dangerous Thing. Dangerous Thing, so yeah.
Were you in the podcast?
I'm not. No. But I listened to it last night, though. I didn't even know he had a podcast until. But I listened to it. No, it's good. It's good. I listened to the most recent episode. It was good. And I'm also, excited. Also yeah. On top of that, he was my stand-up 101 teacher. So I took a stand-up 101 class on Zoom.
He's your teacher. Wait.
Yeah.
He's the reason you're funny.
Well, no. So he had to suffer through all my beginning material. So I mean,
I have to first meet the guy and tell him I'm so sorry you went through the process.
Yeah. So anyway, let's give it up for Chip Chantry.
Yeah,
gentlemen, thank you for all those wonderful accolades. Yeah. Just
and thank you for suffering.
And look how far I've come. Yeah. So you took my class. Yeah, I've been teaching the class at Helium Comedy Club in Philly for 5-6 years now. And of course, just like everybody else in the world, we went to Zoom in 2020, 2021.
Right.
And man, and that's when you took it. You took it over Zoom. Yeah. Yeah. And that was a tough sell, man. I think it was every Monday night, maybe. That's my guess.
I think it was Sunday. Yeah. I think it was every Sunday.
Was it Sunday? Okay. Every Sunday night. Like, because it's, you know, it's, I love teaching stand-up, but like doing it over Zoom, like we just figured out how to do Zoom comedy in the first place.
Right.
And then to be like, you've never done it before. Now you're going to do it over Zoom is like, it's like learning how to golf underwater. You're like, there's no reason for anybody to do. You'll learn something, but you're going to have to totally relearn it again.
Absolutely. But I just want to say that sounds way better than Zoom, because believe me when I say this, stand up in the Zoom during the pandemic for Indians was shit, because nobody was looking at the camera, nobody was turning on the camera, right?
So, are you talking about the audience or the comedians?
Audience. Like imagine this is what it is. I mean, let me try to give my experience. Let's say you guys are performing.
We went to the experience of India. Right.
So this is what. You guys are performing, so this is what people would normally do, okay? Types of people. Type A. Right.
Okay. I'll do a bit. So have you guys ever heard about, like, taking a shit? It's not really taking, you're not taking it with you, though. So, okay. That's what they would do?
Yeah, they would, like, lie in different positions, like this. Or they'll do this.
So boring.
Oh, that's awful.
Yeah.
Right? Or my personal favorite, which I get all the time, is this.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. You're on two different forms of media and you're not.
I remember from our class, though, everyone had to be muted, though. You remember that?
Yes.
Everyone had to be.
Yeah.
That's so crazy, because you don't know if you're going good or not. You're just like going through the material. I'm like, I don't know if it's funny. Everyone said they were funny afterwards, but like.
It's tough. And because then I figured that out, and I forget how I did it the next time around. But Speaking of being muted, hold on just a second because my dog is.
He's got a dog. See, he's got a dog. See, now I have respect for people when they have a dog.
Bark at somebody. So yeah. And again, it was such a blip. I barely remember teaching that class, but I learned the sweet spot, like, because it's a completely different beast doing stand up on Zoom,
right?
And you have to figure out that it's a totally different thing. Like, some people thought you could just stand, and there's something to be said for that, you could stand there and hold a microphone and, like,
that's bullshit. That's
can't
that's
do it.
It's bullshit.
I will say, I was forced to do that one time for a corporate gig, right. And they were just such a great crowd
great.
It actually went really well. But other than that, you can't. What you have to learn is that, like, it's stand up is all about connecting with a group of people. So you have to make a connection. So when you're on stage, you're in the room with the people. So you're up on stage, you're holding the microphone, but you're in the same room. You have to break that down when you're on Zoom. So instead of being back up here, you want to be right here, like it's just the three of us talking. I'm going to make you guys laugh. There could be 200 people on Zoom, but you have to be like, instead of telling this big story, like, I'm going to tell you this, it's like, all right, guys, look, I'm going to whisper this story.
It makes it.
You have to make it intimate.
And
that's what you have to do. We, myself and a few other comedians, we did a bunch of corporate gigs over the break just to try to make some money. And the sweet spot that we learned, and this is what, if people have to do this in the future, the sweet spot that we learned, let's say there's 100 people on Zoom watching this thing.
Right.
What we do is we'd ask the person in charge, the point person, be like, look, what we want you to do is, this is like a couple days ahead of time, pick like a dozen or two dozen people out of that 100 that you trust, that don't have kids screaming in the background, that don't have dogs.
Oh my God. I hate that. I get kids all the time, every time.
Right. And it's like, no, get them away. So, and that are also like good laughers. They have a good sense of humor. Can you get those 12 to 20, 24 people to turn their microphones on?
Right.
And then everybody else is muted. So it's not chaos of 100 people and like every little person in the background, but there's about 15 to 20 people roughly who are mic'd. They know they're mic'd. They're cool with it. They're going to be paying attention so that when we're performing, you can hear 15 people laughing.
Absolutely.
So then it's like, then there's at least a back and forth. You're not just shouting into a well.
Right.
There's at least a back and forth, but it's a controlled back and forth.
Right. Yeah. Or you can just push the kid away in some other room and lock it. That also works.
Lock him in the basement.
I mean, yes.
Lock it in the bathroom, in the closet, whatever, you know. Kick it out of the house.
That's what needs to
happen.
Whatever. And it's like, people thought it was like, oh, this is a family event. It's like, this is not a family event. And I'm not a very dirty comic by any stretch, but I'm like, your 7-year-old should not be hearing what I'm saying.
Absolutely.
Right. They think, oh, are you gonna clean it up for it? No, it's fucking kid out of the room. We're at a comedy show right now. Yeah.
I mean, like the worst situations which I have faced with Zoom shows is the phone. Obviously, the one I told you with the phone and just thing. Kids is second, and the third main important which I normally get is the mother-in-law enters the room for some reason.
Oh yeah.
Or you have to have your roommate talk to you.
Yeah.
Or you have your husband say what's up on a WhatsApp fucking phone.
Yeah.
Like really at that time.
Yeah.
Are you checking in on your marriage in middle,
of
and this is all audience, right? And this this happens. So it's even worse in the Zoom which I've done is where people come and they barely give you the attention and you're like performing and shit. Mm-hmm. But they come for certain type of people, like audience just come for a certain guy, right? Let's say there are 15 people come in, right? Mm-hmm. And then for one particular guy. Now, if that guy is done with the set and he or she leaves, everybody else leaves.
That's the worst.
And I'm like, and you can't do that shit in the live fucking gig. You can't pull this off in a live gig because you can't be openly insensitive because they're witnesses, right?
Yeah.
So that these are things which I had a very bad time in pandemic doing Zoom shows, right? It was the only thing I did in pandemic was just sessions, practice, maybe doing international shows. But the Indian crowd, fuck no.
Yeah.
doing that. No, I'm sorry.
So
I also love the, like, it was always like some lady who'd be like just figuring out Zoom, you know, and like she's part of this. And then so she's on there and then I'm in the middle of a bit, I'm telling a story, I'm doing a joke, and then I just hear one lady just go, Yeah, I'm on Zoom. Like she's talking to her husband next. Yeah, I'm on Zoom. I'm watching a comedy show. I'm watching a comedy show. I'm on Zoom. Yeah, it's, no, there's a comedian. It's for work. And I'm like, I can hear you, lady. Please, you know, it's like they're so comfortable behind their screen. Right. They wouldn't. And like, she's not doing maliciously. She didn't realize. But also, right. It's like you need to be extra aware that like,
no, that's
you're
no
in
excuse.
A social situation.
Listen, that's no excuse. You're not that incompetent to have to see simple instructions in front of you. That's no excuse.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And
exactly.
The worst time is when you're doing crowd work and they're like, is it working? Can you hear me? Hello?
Yes.
Can you hear me? Yeah. Is it on? Is it on? Hello?
I'm yes. Like, turn it off, please.
Yeah.
So like, how did you get into stand-up? Because I remember.
Yeah. Also, do tell a little bit about yourself.
Please.
A little introduction about yourself and, you know, when did you start stand-up?
Yeah, so I've been doing stand-up for about a little over 15 years now. So I was – I grew up in Philly, outside of Philly, and I always loved stand-up. Like, I don't know about you guys. Like, I watched stand-up from when I was, like, 7 years old. My friends were watching cartoons. I was watching stand-up, and I thought it was the greatest thing in the world. So – and then I did – you know, I always wanted to get into it, but how? Like, it's like – I didn't know you could take a class. Like, what? You don't go to college for it, although some people do now.
Right.
So I got involved in like theater. So I did like theater in high school and did all that stuff because I love being on stage, love getting laughs and things like that. Kind of forgot about it in college. I never forgot about it, but I was like just doing my own thing in college. And then I became a teacher and I wanted to be a comedian. And so basically what happened, my brother is a musician. He was a musician, still plays. He's a drummer.
Right,
and he was in a band in Philadelphia for years. And I would hang out with the band all the time. And I can play a little music. I'm not good, but like I play a little guitar. I can't be in a band. But the band was like so cool and I loved to hang out with them. And I was always the funny guy. So I'd be hanging out making everybody laugh. And I got to know all of the other bands, all these other musicians in the city. It's like, I want to be a part of this, but I'm not talented enough. Like, how do I do it? And they're like, oh, you're funny. You should do comedy. And this was in the early 2000s when in Philadelphia and across the country, but in Philly especially, there was almost no comedy happening. There was almost no stand-up.
Cool. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Really?
It was not cool.
In Philly? In Philly?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so there was, you know, in America, you know, like it, there was the comedy boom in the late 70s, early 80s, all throughout the 80s, the comedy boom. Early 90s is when a couple things happened, but it was like oversaturated. There's too many clubs. Plus, there was stand-up comedy on every cable station, A&E, HBO, Comedy Central, everything. So it kind of got worn out. So then it died. So in the like mid-90s, I would say, comedy kind of died for a number of years and it didn't really come back hard until like the mid to late 2000s. And I think the internet and podcasts really brought it back, you know, got people connected and got people coming out to shows.
Right. So
I was in that dip when there was nothing happening. Mm-hmm. But so here's what happened. My brother's band booked me to do comedy to open for them at one of their shows without telling me. They didn't tell me. And I was walking down the street one day. Yeah. I saw a poster and it was like, and this is actually funny. I'm actually looking over my computer to the wall because I have it framed now. It's a poster. it says their band's name and it says with comedy guest Chip C. And I was like, what is this? So I called my brother right away, literally from a payphone. That's how long ago this was. And I was like, he was like, yeah, we were going to tell you tonight at the practice, you're going to perform next week. So they knew I'd been writing jokes. I had like a secret notebook full of jokes that I never did anything with. And they're like, you have a week, you have to prepare. So I did. And I figured I'd do it once in my life and bomb, but then be like, okay, I did stand-up comedy, check it off my bucket list, and then go skydiving or whatever.
That's it.
Yeah.
Yes, bomb and skydiving. Yes.
Yeah, I was like, it's like it can't go worse than that. So I performed, and I have to say, it was mostly friends and family that were there. So the stack was, you know, the deck was stacked in my
favor. That's pretty safe. It's very safe.
Right.
Yeah, it's very safe, yeah.
But there's although like 60 people packed in this room.
I'll say this. When I performed my first time, my brother and my mom were there, and I got no laughs. So it's not always stacked in your favor, but like I think in your case,
oh, it's always
only family and friends. Yeah.
See, that's the worst part, because like I know I wasn't that funny, but I got laughs, big laughs, because almost everybody was there to see me, so it was supportive. What you did was like you were playing an away game because nobody was there to see you, but there's only two people there.
Do you
know what I mean? So like you didn't have that. You had those two people, but they're just witnesses. They're not going to turn the crowd. So the whole crowd. But like I don't know about you guys, but like I still remember that night. I can picture where everybody was sitting in the room, and I still remember getting that first wave of laughter.
Right.
And it was just like, it was better than any drug, better than sex, better than anything I've ever done in my life. It was just like, oh my God, this is what I have to do forever now. Like I was just, I couldn't sleep for like two nights. I was so pumped. Right.
It got a different feeling altogether. When you play it back in your head, what you just heard, it just sounds so different. And yeah, it just feels really good.
It does. Yeah. It really does.
Yeah. It's the greatest feeling in the world. And so what I did was I did the worst thing I possibly could. I just rode that wave for a couple of months because I was so scared to do it again. But I could tell everybody that I'm a stand-up comedian. Oh, I do stand-up. And everybody wanted, he does stand-up comedy. I did it one time. So I didn't perform for like 3 months because like, how do you live up to that? But I went to one open mic and it went fine. I got a couple laughs. We went fine. And then I got scared again and I waited another 3 or 4 months and then went to another open mic, and that was very mediocre at best. Mm-hmm. And I waited another like 3 or 4 months again. And then finally, like that first year, I don't even count because like I did it four times maybe. Right. And then I finally took a stand-up comedy class in Philly. And that's when it was like 6 weeks in a row. I did the class. There was an open mic at the club right after the class. So I just stayed for the open mic 6 weeks in a row. And then it was just like, I was totally done. Broke up with the girl I was dating, kind of stopped talking to my friends. Just that's all I want to do is just like,
oh yeah, that's a good
new stand-up.
Yeah, you gotta make a good investment if you're doing
exactly.
This.
Yeah. I was jumping in with both feet this time.
Yeah.
I remember what's the bar called in Philly, Chip? The one with like the upstairs.
Fergie's?
Yeah, Fergie's. Yeah. I remember
that's where Fergie. I did my first show. That was my first show.
Okay, okay.
It was upstairs. My brother's band used to play Fergie's all the time. Okay. And it was upstairs Fergie's, yeah.
Okay. So I saw
And they still Fergie's. Do comedy there. They do comedy there.
Do.
Now. Yeah.
They do. So I saw you at one of the open mics though, but you were on the showcase with Shane Connor, right? Shane O'Connor.
Right. Yeah, Shane O'Connor. Yeah.
And yeah. I think wasn't there like a heckler in the audience? I remember there was somebody who was like,
I remember that.
Yeah. There was somebody, I remember like, oh my gosh. Like,
I went after, it was something about, I was like talking about it, cause I had just come back from a road trip. This is about a year and a half ago. Right. Yes, maybe.
Yeah.
And I remember that. And it was just like, I think she was just giving information, but it just like totally ruined the. And I was like, that's a dumb name for a park, blah, blah, blah. And it was like because I had just come back from a road trip and it was like some dumb state park that I drove past. I was like, that's dumb. Yeah. And then she's like, it's in Arkansas or like something like that. She's like, yeah, it's blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, I don't need this information. And she just kept telling me information. About it. I'm telling a joke. What are you doing?
Yeah, that happens with me as well, especially with Indian aunties. So you start a conversation and they really think that they are listened to, but they just find a loophole to just exaggerate. Yeah. I mean, people like
that's what I get worried about, because comedy is, it's a one-way conversation that you have to pretend is a two-way conversation. So it's like the only way it's two ways is getting laughter. Now, obviously some people do crowd work, and crowd work's fine if it's controlled. But what I'm seeing now is, because everybody's doing this, is everybody's doing crowd work on Instagram and TikTok now. The way that started was big comics who had like specials coming out, let's say, are running material. They want to put material up, but they don't want to burn material before their hour special comes out.
Absolutely.
So they're not going to do their really good joke about, you know, their dog. So they're going to wait for the special. So, but something happens in the moment where there's a, you know, there's a back and forth and you do crowd work. That's lightning in a bottle. That's not going to happen again. So it's like, I can show this as an example of what I do. It's funny. It's in the moment. I'm not going to put that in a special, obviously, so they're not burning material. So then every comedian in the world decides, well, I got to do stand up. I got to do crowd work now and record it. And anytime there's any interaction with an audience member, they put it online. And I just get worried that like audience members, people are just going to start seeing that. And they're like, oh, we're supposed to talk to the comedians. It's like, no, you're not. That's not what this is.
Yeah.
So that worries me a little bit.
I do worry about that too. And it's almost like, I think some people are like, ooh, like they want to have like, couldn't this go viral on Instagram? Like, ooh, this is like my Instagram bit, whatever. Right. And I think it's like, you should just be writing bits to make fun that you think is funny though. Right. Like, what do you think is funny? Like, what do you want to talk about? Don't just write things that are going to be like trendy, like just because it's something in the news, like, okay, cool. I'll just put this on Instagram. Now it's going to go viral and get a lot of likes, you know, but that's the world we live in today. And so.
Exactly. And you have to put stuff up, and I don't post as nearly as much stand up as I should. And like, there are moments where there are really funny crowd work moments that you definitely want to document, but it's like some people, it's like anytime there's an interaction, they do. It's like, why are you wasting our time with this?
I remember in the class, like, there's like a lot of different like writing processes. Like, so what are you using though to write now at days now? So like, I'm sure it's different than when you first started.
I'm not the best at like being like super diligent about like sitting down and writing. I've never been that type of comic where it's like, all right, for a half hour a day, an hour a day, I'm going to sit down, I'm going to write jokes. I can't. I can't write jokes.
Jerry does that for like 3 hours a day. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And look where he is. Look where I am. Right. Maybe I should do that more.
Yeah.
Hey, you know what? I don't sit and write jokes either. And like, I don't sit and dedicate. I've said this to Kevin. I don't really sit, but I make it a point to write down whatever I feel like on.
Yes.
Right. I don't tell my brain to consciously process a joke. Right. I don't want to, hey, let's think about something funny. I don't do that, right? Because I know that you're going to be hit with something and it'll be like, you know, it'll just come to you. Mm-hmm. So because that's the process I follow, because I've never sat down and written jokes. I've sat down to make it better, but I've never sat down to make it from scratch, because the better what I rewrite, most comedians rewrite. We don't write fresh jokes.
Sure. And you get on stage and you work it on a stage and you're going to rewrite that way too. It's a process. Right. The one thing that I learned, and I'm assuming I talked about this in class, but in that class, but what I learned was, is like, cause people always ask, they're like, how do you write comedy? And it's like, honestly, I'm supposed to be teaching stand-up classes. I don't know how you write comedy, but what I realized is it's not writing comedy. It's finding comedy. That's what our job is. It's not to write jokes. Right. It's to find jokes. You can kind of like, and Shady was saying, if you can train your brain to be an observer of the human race and everything that's going on around you, and you're keeping your eyes and ears open, and then you walk past a store and you see a weird sign, or you have a conversation with somebody, or you get in a fight, you get an argument with somebody, or you're watching TV and this, you know, something comes up about whatever, it's, you have to be an observer and be like, oh, that registers. And I call it like planting a seed. It's not like, I'm not going to write a funny joke right now. I'm not writing a funny joke. I'm just documenting this idea. I have a, and I used to do it.
Or get inspiration. Or you're inspired by that. Or you're just inspired by, because at least in my situation, I mean, Chip, first of all, that is the exact process how I write. I get most of my jokes when I talk to people, when I'm having conversation. Yep. So sometimes when you talk to people, you say things which you don't even know that it like you said it, you know, like it's like your brain surprises you with punchlines, you know.
Yeah.
So sometimes when you're having an interesting conversation, and when that happens, and I'm like, holy shit, this was funny. Wait, let me write it down, you know, like that.
Yeah.
You circle back. So, but that's my process, where I just observe and I just interact, because I feel that if I have to be around people to get some material, I can't just, you know.
And that's exactly right. And like I joke with my wife sometimes. It's like my writing when we moved in together, it suffered because I used to live with comics. You know, over the years, I lived with like five or six different comics over the years. In a big house, and there's always comics coming through. So we would sit up until 2 a.m. and just make fun of each other, make fun of whatever's on TV, make fun of everything. And then it's like, oh, write that down. That's really funny in that conversation.
Right.
Where, and especially with the pandemic, like we're just sitting around the house. There's nothing. I wrote some material, but it's like, I'll tell you this. Some of my best material that I write is, first of all, it's when I'm performing. So it's like, if I'm doing a week and I'm doing like 8 shows in a week, I'm constantly in that gear. So I'm always writing. If I don't have any shows this week, I'm not thinking about it too much.
Right.
Plus, if I'm on the road, if I'm in, you know, Portland or Austin or LA right. or whatever, I'm in a right. new location. So everything's new and fresh to me. I'm looking yes. at everything, taking everything into yes. it.
Right.
When I'm just in my neighborhood seeing the same things all the time, I'm not as inspired. So it's like, I have to get out of that. I can't just always travel, but it's like right. you have to interact with people. You want to see things and observe things. And like, I used to have like the, you know, the old notebook in my pocket. Now I just have a 12-page Google Doc right now. Mm-hmm. That's all just like, it's just ideas. It's yeah. bullet points of yeah. like, here's something I saw.
Right.
Or like, it's just something interesting. It's not a full joke. You know, it's like,
I think like, your okay, process like, is very similar to mine because I mean, at least the way I write is I don't write a full joke. Mm-hmm. I basically right. write a setup. I write the situation. I write the punchlines and I write the points. And yep. then as I'm performing, I, you know, stretch it like a fucking bubble gum, you know, yep. exaggerate. Yep. Like I've never gone word to word with the script, you know, like never gone.
Sure.
I mean, maybe if it is a really tight thing, if I'm gluing multiple sets together, but I've never written even in my phone, like all our fucking points. So, which oh, is yeah. so easy. Because it's really easy because I mean, I feel that how you want to remember a joke and how you want to say it, that's how you write it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, exactly. Because, and it's yeah. also, it's comedy isn't a written art form. It's a verbal art form.
Right.
Yes. So it's, you know, some people are really funny writers. And I was just actually working with somebody recently who like, this person was a really funny writer, but it wasn't translating well. And it's like, you can't read this stuff. You can't say it word for word. Yeah. You just got to have the idea and talk it out. And right. it'll be funny that way in the shorthand that we use in our language, not yeah. a paragraph form.
True.
You know, and, yes. and there are funny yeah. things that you can write, like the Onion and really mm-hmm. hilarious mm-hmm. novels.
Yeah.
But that's not stand-up. It's a totally yeah. different art form.
I was just talking about with somebody the other day that with stand-up, you need both delivery and you need writing too.
Right.
And you can't have one or the other, right? So I think like there are some stand-up comics who have great delivery, but maybe their writing isn't great, but they can still sell a joke because they have great delivery, right?
Sure.
If you're a right. great writer and you don't have great delivery, the joke is not going to land all that well, though.
There it'll look are...
good on paper, but it'll be hard to sell it on the show.
Right.
So...
But there are, like, great writers in India where they do sitcoms and they write for TV shows. But when I see these writers go to this comedy club and they perform, I can genuinely say they're horrible. I can say they're horrible in terms of they are great writers because you know a person with his credits, his work, his name, you know, it's in the fucking credits, right? And on Instagram. But imagine witnessing this guy with a bunch of other comics and doing the same joke. No, but here's my take. Not all writers can be great comedians in terms of delivery, to be very honest.
Oh no, not at all.
I mean, yeah. it's just because you're a comedic writer doesn't mean you are great in delivery. Okay, it doesn't yeah. go that way. I've seen that happen.
And vice versa. You know, you see great comedians who can't translate into writing either.
Right.
You know, it's like a lot of times it can, but not always.
Right.
And it's so funny too, because you were talking about Seeds, Chip, which by the way, I still call it Seeds, by the way, just from the class.
Nice.
So I still call it Seeds. But when I was in so this past year I went to Arizona, I went to Seattle, and I still have like a bunch of jokes just from them because I've never been to those places. So I was able to come yep. up with a lot of material just because like, oh, what are the differences between Arizona and New Jersey? What are the differences between New Jersey and Seattle, right? And I was able to build yeah. up a lot of jokes just because I was like almost like an alien in like a new place. So
it's exactly what it is. And that's what we have to teach ourselves, to be an alien in our own city, in our own mm-hmm. lives
yeah.
and step back and, you know, not take anything for granted. Like little things like, you know, Roy Wood, it's got this bit. We might even watch him. I love this bit where he does about discount cards. You know, you get like a discount card.
Yeah,
yeah. It's like, we take that for granted. It's like, oh yeah, I'm at CVS or I'm at the grocery store and you just swipe the card, you get 10% off or whatever. You don't even think about it. He took the time to be like, wait a minute, why is this happening? And then questioning it like a 4-year-old, why do we do this? Why does this have to happen?
Right.
Yeah. He, again, if we didn't have discount cards, but we went on vacation to California and they had this system of discount cards, we'd be like, wait, what's this deal with it? But we just always had it. So it's like, so we have to take stock of our own lives and be like, wait a minute, that's weird. That thing that I do every single day, let's break that down and talk about it.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
I want to ask you, how was Kevin as a student?
Oh my God.
He was punctual.
He forgot all about
it. He was well refined. No, he did a great job. And again, I was in such a haze during this time, during this pandemic, that like that whole, and by the way, do you remember how many students were in the class? Like roughly.
There were six, and I was the only guy in the class. So there's five other women and then myself.
That's right. Damn it. You were surrounded by women. Oh my God.
Yeah. That's
give,
right.
Give me access right. to just, class next time. Where the fuck was I? God,
because I had a few classes that were literally like 15 people. Oh, and that's like that's too many people for like an in-person class. Like I ask them, they usually cap my in-person classes at like 12. Like 12 people, because like because people are performing and they're doing, you know, 4 or 5 minutes. You can't have 15, 16 people going. It takes forever. And then to give feedback. Yeah. And then just imagine on Zoom how rough Zoom is anyway. And then to watch 15 brand new people doing 5 minutes and then give it would take 3 hours just that. And it was exhausting. I was just fried.
Yeah, and the attention, you got to segregate your attention, and it's not that easy, right? You got to distribute your attention, and it's really exhausting going one, and it's really exhausting. I'm 15 people.
Yeah. But that's you were in that class where it was just the women, the five women and you. Yeah. I forgot about that. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember my first bit was Starbucks versus Dunkin'. I thought, this is a great bit. I don't even have that as a bit anymore in my joke. But I'm like, they're comparing the two of them.
Of course. And that's the thing where you have this baby of a joke when you first start out. You're like, I live and die by this material. It's 6 months. It's a year. It's 2 years later. It's like, I've never said that joke ever since. You know, but those first jokes so hard because it's all you have. So it's like you just hold on to them, and then you're like, oh, I've been doing this for 6 months. I have 10 other jokes that are way funnier than any of those. And that's the way it should be. You know, it's like it should always progress and get better. It's like there was interviews with George Carlin when he was like 70 years old where he was like, oh, that special from 2 years ago, I'm so embarrassed by that. He's like, because he was just always getting better. Right. And he's George Carlin. And this is in the 90s or 2000s. And he was like, oh, yeah, especially from two years ago, it was garbage. Right. And like, I'm getting better now, though. You know, he's been doing it for 50 years at this point.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's George Carlin. That's what you just say, George Carlin. That's it.
Yeah.
It's exactly.
Who's your favorite comic, Chip? Who's
your favorite comic?
I'm gonna say probably my favorite of all time. Dana Gould is my favorite. Mm-hmm. I love Dana Gould. He's I've been lucky enough to work with him a few times, and he was like one of the kind of those godfathers of alt comedy, they call it, like where it was that thing back in the early 90s, back in like there was some in New York and LA and San Francisco. So I think LA is where he started. It was like him and Sarah Silverman, but I'm thinking of somebody else. I can't think of her name right now, but there was a Jeannie Garofalo and a couple other comics where like they started a thing where it was like because they're in LA. So it's like every time they're on stage at the Improv or somewhere, there's always like scouts for the Tonight Show or for Letterman or whatever. Yep. So they always had to do their best material. And there's no time to like just work out material. You know, there wasn't that. So they started a night where it was like, it was a book show and it was like, you know, like a bookshop or something like that. But they're like, you can only do brand new material. So that kind of started the alt comedy scene. And he was a part of that. And it's like, that was always what I looked up to. And I liked him when he was like younger. I remember when I was a kid watching him. And then he wrote for The Simpsons for a bunch of years.
Nice.
You know, so he's got a pedigree of but I've always appreciated his delivery, his writing is like, it's super dark, but it's super silly and funny and it's smart. And it's, so he's one of my favorites. Todd Glass is another one who's like become a friend of mine I love Todd. And
wow.
How about you guys?
So for me, mine is, I have a couple, but like, I think Aziz Ansari, his old material was so good. His older special was really, really good. That was like my favorite comic. Also, from newer ones, like I like Mark Norman. Mark Norman is killer. Oh, I've seen him a couple times. Yeah. So good.
Yeah. Great show writer.
And Taylor Tomlinson, her two specials on Netflix, amazing. So,
I remember, so a couple years ago, this is before the pandemic, Helium in Philly, they would do these I think it was called Helium Confidential, Stand Up Confidential, where it was the secret headliner where you didn't, like, you bought tickets, but you didn't know who the headliner was going to be.
Right.
I would feature, I featured on a couple of those shows, and like, I would show up to the club, not even know who it'd be. Like, usually the owner would tell me, but like, if it just, they're like, oh, there's headliner show tomorrow night, can you come and do it? And it's like, yeah, sure. So I didn't even, so I'd get there, and the one night it was this like literally young girl. She's like 22 or something like that. Maybe a little bit older, 25.
Yeah,
Taylor Tomlinson, and I was like, okay. I was like, I had no idea who she was. I was like, I guess she's funny. Like, she's obviously here, but like, what's this all about? And yeah, and like, I mean, I was very nice to her, and I was like, you know, it wasn't like I was like thinking she was gonna be shitty or something like that. But I, obviously, she was there as a headliner, but I didn't know who she was. So I do my set, and then I just go sit in the back of the room and watch her, and she's just a murderer, You know, just so funny.
So cool. Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
What about you and Shady?
Okay, my favorite comedian, I have a couple of, but the best ones which I normally listen to is Ricky Gervais.
Sure.
I love Ricky Gervais. Like, I mean, people hate him, but I love him. And obviously we have the George Carlin or Kevin Hart. Obviously,
yeah,
sure. Kevin Hart, yes, Kevin Hart, and I want to say Louis C.K., but I'm just very picky about just his very selective bits. I love him for his sketches. I love him for his sketches, mm-hmm. at least the one which he does with the crowd work. So Kevin Hart, George Carlin, Louis C.K., and Mark Norman, but it gives me a lot of dad jokes vibe.
Mark I love Norman. That. See, that's what I love about him.
He's more like a
it's
guy.
It's like absurd. It's silly. Yeah.
He can actually commit a murder and he can still get away with it. Like,
probably.
He can like stand next to a dead body and people will still be like, yeah, this guy.
That's not that guy.
Yeah. Obviously not. Be. Yeah, somebody just dipped his hand in blood. So
sure, this is all a big mix-up.
It's a mix-up, man. Just so he's got that easy getaway face, you know?
Yeah.
And it still boggles me how he's not aging. Like, I don't know what the fuck is wrong with his face.
Exactly. He looks so young. Yeah.
Isn't he young? I mean, is he taking tips from Keanu Reeves? Like, just curious.
I don't know. The Matrix. He took the pill.
He did.
And
I mean, obviously, I want to say Dave Chappelle as well. I would say Dave Chappelle would be my first because I like to go back and look at the old Dave Chappelle, like, not the new ones, the old ones. And the only reason I do that is because of the delivery, the wordplay, the emphasis, you know? So it just sets you in the 90s vibe of comedy, you know, that was very, I would say that time was way more pure and realistic and free than how it is in today's in right now. Like, okay. And I don't know if anybody should listen to it, but sometimes Steve Harvey, sometimes.
Okay.
Steve
Harvey's
good.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Steve Harvey's good. It's good. Is like, there's a show called As For Real, and it's a live comedy show, not a show, but his monologue or something like that. Let's look it up. Where I saw Steve Harvey, very, this is how I know he's old, because he had hair on his head. So
okay.
So that Steve Harvey was really funny, mm-hmm. right? And I often go back and look at us is because he's more philosophical and he's more of.
Now, I want to talk about something silly. You said Jaws. You're like the biggest Jaws fan. Why are you the biggest Jaws fan, though? Tell me.
It's the greatest movie of all time. It's my favorite movie. It has everything.
Right.
I'm obsessed with, like, I will watch. You know, it's everybody watches in the summertime, and of course, watch in the summertime, but like at least 10, 15 times a year, I'll watch the movie. Like, once a month, usually it's like I have to watch it. Uh-huh. And it's when I was a kid, like I was a little kid, like it came out before I was born, but like it was always around video stores and everything. So when I was a kid, we would just watch it constantly. And it's, you know, everybody knows it as sort of an action movie, thriller, horror movie, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
That's the thing, because it's not, there's not a genre, because there is action, there is drama, there is suspense and horror in it, but it's funny too. There are so many dry, hilarious, jokes and even just like little things. Like there's this scene, the famous Indianapolis scene when Quint is doing the thing. But before that, they were drunk and they're comparing their scars. So it's like Quint, the old fisherman, and then you have Richard Dreyfuss, the young oceanographer.
Yeah.
And then you have Brody, you know, who is just like, he's a cop, but like he's not of the ocean, you know, he doesn't like mm-hmm. boats and everything. And so they're just showing each other their scars, like, oh, I got this one from a thresher shark, I got this one from a whatever moray eel. And
the other thing to brag about, just
yeah, right, he doesn't have anything to brag about, and he's just standing back. And at one point, the camera goes to him, and he's just standing away from them as they're drunkenly doing this. And he just looks down and he pulls up his shirt to reveal his appendix scar. Like, you know, he's got an appendix from when his appendix out.
Yeah, he
looks at it. He's like, oh, I can't share this. Like, it's the only scar he had. Do you know what I mean? He's like, I can't. And it's like, it's so funny. Because he's like, you know, he's like, oh, I got this scar, but it's from your fucking appendix. Yeah.
That counts. That's a scar. That counts. Yeah, that's pain. Yes. But I would say Jaws has got a different thing in my head. Like, I've seen it, but I've never been attached to it. Never been attached to it. But there are movies which are very similar to Jaws, like Deep Rising. Have you seen Deep Rising?
Never seen it.
No.
All right, please watch Deep Rising, which is not Jaws, but it's really horrid. And
is it a shark movie?
It's not a shark movie.
Okay.
But it is related to people falling in the water and getting fucked up by the ocean. So
okay. Yeah. All right. I'll take it.
But Jaws has got a different franchise. Like, you know, it's even in sitcoms, even in you know, when you watch Friends or something like that, they give the reference of this movie. That's how famous the movie was.
Oh, and the song. You know? The song is everywhere. Is absolutely iconic too. Like, you know.
Yeah. That score is John Williams is just two notes, and it totally everybody on earth knows it.
Yeah. Do you have a bunch of shark jokes, Chip? You have to, right?
I don't think I've ever done. Chip. I'm trying to think about it. I probably should, because that's what I know.
You gotta do it.
I wish I did. I should. I'm on it. I'm gonna.
You gotta
I'm
do
gonna
it.
Sit
do
down.
It.
I'm gonna write
to have a shark joke. Come on.
I'm gonna write five shark jokes for you.
Shark joke. Come on, man. Like.
Yeah.
It's bad enough like a marine biologist or something like that. Yeah,
exactly. Something aquatic. Something aquatic.
Yeah. Can I just sink into you? I just want to bite you.
Yes. Right. Exactly.
Exactly. Yeah. Totally.
That's a sexual harassment joke right there.
So you have you were a fourth grade teacher, right? So
yeah.
Were you funny as a teacher too? Does that make you a little bit more of a cleaner comic because you were having that though? Or like what did that?
Yes and no. So I really struggled with it. So I taught for 15 years mm-hmm. and for about 10 of those, I was also doing stand up. So I was teaching during the day, doing stand up at night. And I was very nervous about, like, I didn't want kids because they're 9 years old, right? And like, I didn't want kids to find out about it. I didn't want parents to find out about mm-hmm. it. Like, other teachers knew, my principals knew, so my bosses knew. And like, my principals were always really cool, and like, they would even come out and see me. They were very supportive, so I was cool with that. But like, I didn't want other administrators to know. Again, didn't want it. So I, and like, every once in a while, a kid would find out, or your parent would find out, whatever. And 99 times out of 100 was fine. Like, one or two times I'm like, oh, somebody saw something and it was inappropriate, whatever. But I think I've never been like a super dirty person anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I made an extra effort to keep things pretty clean because I was so afraid that if like parents came to a show and I didn't know they were there, or you know, they saw it on the internet or whatever. So I always tried to be a little more clean. And I think it really helped my career because it caused me to be, you know, you don't just have that shock humor of just like, you know, dirty jokes or, you know, inappropriate, whatever.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It was like, you had to take that extra step. And like, there's dirty comics, dark comics out there that I love that are brilliant, but it's like, it also takes a little something extra if you're going to be squeaky clean and also try to kill to do that. Yeah. I'm not squeaky clean, but I did that. So
I'm not squeaky, not I'm clean. So. I'm neither of that. I'm just a dirty comic. And I have converted like Christianity. I'm trying to do clean now, which is becoming very, it's like a hell for me. So yeah. I can't believe that you're a clean comic. Like, I'm
just... Yes, I try. But yeah, I became funnier as a teacher, but like I was so scared that people were going to find out that it was like a different persona. I was just like, boom, I was just business when I was there, and I wasn't very happy when I was there. It's like, I wanted to be out doing comedy, not teaching.
So
I wasn't like jokey joke because I didn't want to be like, oh, Mr. Chantry, he's always making jokes. And then parents and other people were like, oh, he doesn't take this seriously at all. So when I was there, I was like, no, I'm taking this extra seriously. Oh, shit. And looking back, I wish I would have been like, no, I should have just had the confidence to just have fun. And because now when I teach the stand-up class, I'm doing some other teaching things now. It's like there's so much with humor and comedy that you could use to to help the teaching, the education process of like, you know, if you, it's, you know, you attach emotion to something, you learn it better. So it's like, mm-hmm. if I can make something funny and teach it, they're going to learn
gonna
it better.
Forget
like,
it. You're never going to forget it.
Right.
Exactly. And so I'm actually working on a couple things now, like doing some like talks and things like that with teachers to like, how to take comedy and use comedy to teach, which I wish I would have done more when I was a teacher. Cause I wanted to be so straight faced. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
That'll be excellent. That'd be excellent. Not just in teaching. It can be a good parenting skill as well. So a lot of kids.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Like I don't have kids, but like that could definitely be something where it's like, yeah, you can joke around and, you still mean business, but you can be funny. Yeah.
And your dad doesn't have to beat you up. So
right, exactly.
Are you an introvert or an extrovert?
we're asking everybody. We're having a poll right now. Just for every guest. Yeah,
I'd say I'm pretty much an introvert. When I'm not on stage, I'm pretty much an introvert.
When you said what?
When I'm not on stage, yeah, I'm a little more closed off.
Okay. All right. Cool.
Yeah.
She doesn't like introverts. So I found more to ambivert, but more introverted on the ambivert side.
In this case is different because this case I can't say I completely hate them because he did say when he's on stage.
But he's on stage is more exactly
right. So he's not a thorough guy. He compromises. So which
makes absolutely. Yeah. Right. Oh, absolutely. And I can definitely turn it on, but it's like
right.
What did we learn on the podcast? And Shady, let's start with you.
I learned that I have a remain calm for most of my time in this podcast. I also learned that, you know, comedy can also be a source of education to, you know, change the pattern of just basic human to human connection conversation standpoint. So it's not just about writing a joke. It can also be a lifestyle and can also be a behavioral pattern for impacting people, you know? So that's it. And I also learned that, you know, he's got a dog and I like dogs. So I don't like cats. So
yes.
And I learned, last but not least, I learned Kevin is a good boy. He's a good boy.
He is a very good boy.
Yeah. Thank you. Yes. Like a dog. Just like a dog. Exactly.
Kevin, what did you learn?
So I learned that Chip needs to have some shark jokes. And that's his assignment. He has to work on that.
It is.
I don't think you mentioned that your favorite comic was Dana Gold, so I don't think maybe you mentioned that one, but that's cool. Something I learned. I learned that, you know, that teaching, you know, it could be, you can be funny, and I think you'll be able to remember a lot more things, and you know, if the teachers were a lot more funnier, then you know, we retain a lot more information, because I think like It is something to be said where it's like, you don't remember facts, like, you know, what you were learning, like in first, second grade, but you have like memories about certain teachers though.
Yep.
And that's what you're going to remember. And so, that's what I learned.
Yeah.
So Chip, what did you learn?
Yeah. What did you learn, Chip? Yeah. I was about to ask.
I learned that we're all people and we come from all walks of life, but when it comes down to it, you don't take a shit you give a shit. And I think we should all give a shit a little bit more.
Yeah.
Agreed. Got easy, said yeah. that.
Agreed. It went full circle. There you go. So
yeah, full circle. Full circle. Wow.
A callback.
Exactly. Exactly. Chip, where can people find you? Can people find your podcast too? Like, that's, we want people to listen to it. So
yeah, my podcast, A Dangerous Thing, at ADT Pod for A Dangerous Thing podcast on Twitter and Instagram and TikTok. We're starting to put out some videos. I also have a podcast called I Love Rock and Roll with another comedian, the very funny Ken Krantz, who we talk each week. We talk about like a different band or a different musician.
Oh, nice.
And you can find me at Chip Chantry, CHIPCHANTRY, at Chip Chantry on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok. I just started TikTok. I have some videos I'm going to start to upload, but I just started that. But Twitter and Instagram, definitely at Chip Chantry. And I got some albums out there. You can find wherever you get your comedy albums.
Yes. Yes. Sorry. I forgot. No, the album is so good, guys. The album is amazing. Okay. Please
thank
go
you.
Check it out. I'm sorry. I believe it.
So no, 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 no. No, no, no. Yeah, yeah.
I forgot.
I have two out. So two the most recent one was Swingers Party, which that's like my, and then I had one from like 2012. So
yes.
Oh yeah.
Yes. Please listen to his comedy albums. I'll put it in the description. Yeah. Yeah. Really, really good. Yeah. So
well, thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah.
Yes.
Connor needs to zoom in on that reaction.
I'm sorry, but I'm like, as soon as you said, like,
he has
to
zoom in on that. Hey, Connor, zoom in on that. Let's put it on the center.
Yeah.
Cool. All right, guys. All right. That's our podcast. All right,
guys. Thanks for having me. Yeah, this was a lot of fun. Yeah,
of course. Guys, share it with a friend if you enjoyed it, if you liked it. You know, comment.
Yes. And if you don't have friends, make friends and then share.
Yes.
It.
True.
So,
yes.
And by that I don't mean your cousins or your therapist or your late relatives. Okay. That doesn't count. So share it with all your friends. Even exes count. Yeah. Share it with your exes. You know, just because you're not loving each other doesn't mean we can't be happy.
Sure.
So
that's right.
That's true. True. So, and
also
yeah, make
pets.
Sure
you share it with your pets too. Share it with your dog.
Okay, the pet.
Yeah,
that counts. That counts. It counts as a listen.
It counts.
Yeah, so.
Okay, that counts. That counts.
It counts as a listen. So.
Also, guys, please comment in the videos because we really want everybody to please comment and start because this is our 36th video. Holy shit. And we need people to start commenting on the fucking video because we need people because your reactions are more because we put out shorts, right? We put out shorts,
yeah.
Kevin.
Put out videos pretty much daily at this point. So
yeah.
Otherwise we'll get hackers to hack your accounts and comment for you.
comment, subscribe, and we will catch you guys in the next video.
All right. See you guys in the next one. Bye
guys.